0. Good evening. Welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse. What is it like to be young and make your way in the Lehigh Valley? I'm Mike Forsetto, your host, inside the 610 with a unique perspective on what it takes and what makes the Lehigh Valley special. Join me and special guests for conversations about all of the amazing people, places, and events happening inside the 610. Tonight, I welcome Jesse Hike from Pennsylvania Rye Company. Jesse, how are you?
I'm well, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. It's nice to see you again. I remember you being in the restaurant business over 10 years ago. That's when we first met. And now you just opened up a new restaurant, Pennsylvania Rye Company, at 536 Hamilton. Tell me a little bit about how that got started and how it's going.
So in the very beginning, my business partner, Daniel Gonzalez, was actually really walking down the street and ran into someone that he knew from City Center, who is the company that owns our building. And they asked if Dan was still in the business. And when he responded that he was actually out of the business, he asked him, well, would you like to get into the business for yourself? And from there, they got into a conversation about 536 and 538 Hamilton, the old grain space and bottle shop. And then we had a short meeting with City Center after that. Dan and I started spitballing ideas for the location, built the concept, and then built a business plan and pitched it back to City Center. And here we are.
Well, so how long did that all take where you guys came up with the idea, the concept and everything, and then pitched it to them? Did it already happen before that? Did you already have ideas in your mind, or did it just like happen within a week after that opportunity came?
It was actually about a week. You hit the nail on the head. But we actually built the idea around the space. It was a unique opportunity because it was not like we were creating a business and then looking for a space to land it or a specific market or metropolitan. There's a space and it needed a concept, so we created the idea behind it. A big factor in the concept was that we were actually going to use 538 as well as a retail bottle shop, wine store, and beer shop with a little bit of on-premise offerings, but that was a big factor for us. So we decided to make Pennsylvania Rye Company like your neighborhood bar and grill, because it is a restaurant as well. We have two dining rooms and we do offer traditional dinner service, but there's a big bar, good energy behind the bar, and a lot of focus on the bar as well.
Yeah, I have to say I've been in there several times and it's always a very welcoming, home-like feel, a homey feel, and the energy is always great there. The food's always great too. Tell me a little bit about the chef that you got and the type of food that you serve there.
So the chef, Eduardo Alberto, or he likes to be called Lalo for short. We just call him Chef most of the time. But we met about 8 years ago when we opened the Dime restaurant in the Renaissance in Allentown. I was one of the opening managers for the hotel, and Lalo started, I think, about 30 days into it to take over the creativity and structure of the a la carte kitchen, or he was the chef de cuisine. We actually worked again a few years later in Warren, New Jersey, at a place called the Stonehouse of Sterling Ridge. My catering chef had left, and I asked him if he would be interested in the position. And it was a big catering position. It's two catering halls attached to a large restaurant, and he ran them epically. He did a great job. He worked with Chef David Drake on creating the menus and whatnot, and even if you were dining for like 300, it felt like you were at a restaurant, like you're eating a la carte food. Like he really elevated the service. And when I got this opportunity in Allentown, I really couldn't imagine anyone else to come and put a stamp on Pennsylvania Rye Company. It actually took me three tries to get him in the door. I basically was hounding the guy to come and do this.
Now, Pennsylvania Rye Company, I think it has to do with the food as well, along with the good energy behind the bar. And the drinks are amazing. It's one of the hottest restaurants in the Lehigh Valley right now, really growing numbers month by month. What would you say is the reason why people are coming to your restaurant and it's getting so much good energy?
I think it's really that we offer a high quality product from food and beverage, but also it's a comfortable space. We don't require any type of dress code. We keep the lights down low. The music is good and up tempo. We take a lot of time and effort in planning the actual vibe of the place. But I really think it's that our staff is welcoming and we have a tremendous amount of regulars. So like even when new people walk through the door, our regulars greet them like they're like they work for us. It's pretty funny.
That's awesome. So you guys are only now, what, 6 or 7 months into opening?
Well, I think we're going on 8 months.
Eight months now? Yeah. So what do you guys have in your plans in the future to continue to promote and get more of the community to know that you guys are there and this is what you guys do there?
So we're looking to promote our seasonal menu changes in a big way. We've just started exploring more avenues for advertising, and we've made some decisions on the direction we're going to go, but we're really trying to ride the tide of being the restaurant that changes constantly, very seasonal. We want people to be excited about food and excited to come dine. Of course, we want to have our staple dishes that people want to be able to say, well, if I don't find something new that I like, then I'll always like this. And those things will never change. But the menu is growing and changing, and you'll see a big change on the menu in person and in social media and advertising through the seasonality. We're super excited. You know, a lot of floral fruit stuff in the spring, and then when we move into the summer, of course, we're going to utilize more summer vegetables, a lot more fruit. It's going to be really fun.
Wow. So do you guys do like a farm to table? Is it like local stuff that you source your ingredients from, or is it just seasonal, or how do you guys come up with the menu changes?
So we don't work with any farms directly except for some dairy farms for cheese. But we do have distribution from local farms. We use distributors that buy locally and then funnel the produce to us. But seasonality, we definitely follow what's being grown at the time that's best, right? Like you're going to use squash in the summertime and tomatoes when it gets a little bit warmer. So whatever is at its peak season, as close as it gets to us, that's what we choose to use. Like last summer is when we opened. So when you came in, you'd see a lot of heirloom tomatoes from PA and Jersey. You'd see like corn, stuff that was in harvest. So really the harvest is what really we focus our seasonality around.
All right. So since we're on this topic, so your favorite dishes right now that you guys serve, what's your personal favorite dishes at the restaurant?
My personal favorite dish is always going to be the octopus. It's such a winner. Like it's been the big star of the show since we opened, and it feels very summery and light and fresh, but people demanded we keep it on through the winter, and we did, and it's going to be one of our staple dishes, but it's roasted octopus with harissa and avocado puree. It's incredible. It's really good.
It sounds incredible. I had it myself, and I have to say it's very, very good. A lot of people would say, oh, octopus, it's a little exotic for them to get at a restaurant, but as a seafood, it's so tender, it's so tasty, and how you guys have it cooked with the sauces that you have with it, it just goes together perfectly. You know what? I had a dish there not too long ago, and I heard somebody say that it was inspired by you or even cooked by you. It was a seafood gumbo.
Oh, yeah. I cooked it. It's funny. Dan, my business partner, he used to have gumbo at my house all the time, and then we actually became roommates, and like we would be off the same day, like, what should we cook? And he always was like, gumbo. So ever since we opened, he's just like, when are you going to cook gumbo? And I'm always like, when I cannot be doing taxes and payroll and like the bajillion other things that business owners do. And finally, I guess he broke me, and I was like, fine, like let's make gumbo. I made chicken and sausage the first time, but the time that you had it, we actually got experimental and did lobster and crab meat and andouille and fresh oysters, because we were blowing through oysters that week. And I guess we were just excited about them. But I came in at 10 and cooked gumbo for everybody, and we sold out twice.
It was amazing. Probably the best gumbo I ever had in my life. And that was, I went down to New Orleans, and I had gumbo a few times down there. And I have to say, the gumbo you cooked was the best that I ever had.
Well, I grew up eating it. I watched my grandmother and my mom make it my entire life. So I guess I picked it up from them.
Yes, so that's a perfect segue. I wanted to talk about where you came from, how you got here to the Lehigh Valley. Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm from Louisiana. I was born in Metairie, which is a smaller town right outside of New Orleans. We lived in Metairie for, I think, 5 years when I was a child or from birth. And then I think I lived in Mississippi for a short period of time as a baby, but it was not something that I would remember. But we landed in a town called Napoleonville, Louisiana. It is in between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, but further south, if you could believe that's possible. So I'm from a very rural place in Louisiana. I grew up running through cane fields and jumping off bridges into bayous and stuff like that. And then I moved to Baton Rouge in my young adult life. Actually, my family and I, in my adolescence, moved to Gonzales, Louisiana, which is a little bit further north, a little bit more civilization. But I moved to Baton Rouge in my young adult life, and that's when I decided that I wanted to be in the restaurant industry for the rest of my life. I actually was saving money to be a chef. I was working at this place called Jubin's, which is a fine dining restaurant in Baton Rouge, like a really institution. And I was working with a chef named Jamie Hernandez, and he really inspired me. Like one day I was putting sorbet in a freezer, and there was a pig cut down the middle and like just laying over a bead rack. And the other part of the pig was butchered all into the cuts that they would use for the day and laid out nice and neat. And actually, at that very moment, I was like, I want to be a chef. But like my mom and so many other people kind of slowed me down with it. Like they were like, you sure you want to be a chef? It's like long hours. It's crazy. I hear so many people get so stressed out, blah, 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 whatever. But I was saving money to go to culinary school, and I got approached by a management company called Davidson Hotels and Resorts. And they asked me to come manage the front of house. So I did. Just to get in. My whole plan was to sneakily get in as a manager in the front and then somehow become a chef. How that would work, I have no idea. But that was my plan. Once someone let me loose behind the bar, I was able to kind of like let my creative juices flow. I was hooked. And I never thought about the kitchen ever again. So from Baton Rouge, I took a job in Little Rock, Arkansas through that company for a transitioning of a hotel. And then the F&B director there, I met Valerie Cooper. She moved to the Renaissance Allentown for opening and asked me to run beverage for the hotel for that. So that's how I got to the Valley, opening the Renaissance.
Gotcha. Yeah, I could tell, like, wherever you go, the bar is probably one of the best in the area, wherever you go. So, like, you influence the drinks there or the bar there. It seems like whenever you walk into a place that you used to work at, you can tell that Jesse had to do something with the bar here.
Well, I adore beverage. I truly do. A focus in my young career was to become a sommelier, which I actually have never taken any of the testing, but I actually worked as a sommelier in New Jersey, and I've just always had a certain passion for it because I've always loved food, and I guess once you get older, you can experience beverage in a real way, and just the complexity behind it really enthralled me, and I really strive to make the best cocktails I can make or source the best wine that you can find. I truly just adore it, and I just want it to be the best that I possibly can do. In reality, it's because that's what I want to experience, and I like to have fun with stuff too. Like when things are boring, it's just boring.
So for all the listeners out there, where can they find you at, not only at 536 Hamilton, but on social media where they could get to know more about Pennsylvania Rye Company? Where can they find information on?
So you can follow us at pa.rye.co on Instagram. That's our handle. And there's also our website, paryco.com. And you should find links to the bottle shop on both that site and our Instagram account. But also there's the bottleshop.allentown is our Instagram handle for 538, which is our retail wine store that we're working to get open in the near future.
Awesome. Jesse, it was a fascinating story. Thank you so much for coming on today, and good luck.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Inside the 610. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Weekend Edition Saturday is a well-rounded news talk program about the economy, music, literature, and more. Join host Scott Simon and company as they discuss the latest events happening around the world. Start your weekend off with great programming beginning with Weekend Edition Saturday at 8 a.m., followed by NPR's Fresh Air Weekend at 10 a.m., and great folk, blues, and Americana on All Reed Street at 11 a.m., all here on WDIY.
Welcome back to Inside the 610. I'm Mike Frasetto, your host, and now we have a very interesting young person in Allentown who has decided to take a leadership role in the city in some of the biggest ways. Serena Torres, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
So your name has been going around the city in the last few months, and you got your name on the ballot recently to run for Allentown City Council. What made you decide at 21 years old to run for city council?
I decided to run for city council because I believe that there's not enough representation of young people within our government, and I'm really interested in making a more transparent city and a more accessible city for people my age as well.
We had a guest on about a year and a half ago, now Councilwoman Natalie Santos. Did you follow her run to be on the youngest person ever to be on Allentown City Council? Did you follow her campaign, or were you inspired in any way by it?
I did follow her campaign. I door knocked for her, and I also stood outside the polls a little bit for her. Natalie is a personal friend, so I do draw some inspiration from her, but she always encourages me to be my own person and to go into things based on my own merit as well.
I have to say, now with two people 21 years old, one already on city council and another one running, would you say this is more of a young person's movement? Are more young people getting involved in local politics now, especially in Allentown?
I do think this is the start of a movement, and I think that if we continue to use the momentum that we've created, we'll be able to have a seat at every table in Allentown and beyond.
And you think that would improve the city, and in what ways?
I think being able to give young people a voice and using our understanding of the world around us at these different levels of government, as well as just as a citizen, is very important to the city of Allentown and will continuously help us grow.
Let's take a step back for a second. Where did you go to school? What was your, I know you were in Allentown for quite some time, most of your life. What was your upbringing in Allentown like?
So I currently live and grew up in the west end of Allentown. I went to Muhlenberg Elementary School, Trexler Middle School, and I graduated from William Allen High School in 2019. And I now own a small business in the west end of Allentown. So I'm deeply rooted and deeply invested in seeing my community prosper for myself and others as well.
And was there anything in your childhood that got you or pushed you to get into like leadership positions like this, opening up a business at a very young age and deciding to run for city council?
As a child, I was in foster care for a little bit, so having to come from those circumstances and being in survival mode, you sort of create opportunities for yourself because you don't want to be left without any. So I think that really drives me to create for myself and now to create for others, to bring others up with me.
Wow. And now you said you're in a Kutztown University. What are you studying?
I study social work as well as business at Kutztown. So I'm really excited to be able to use both in my new position that I'll hopefully be getting soon.
So besides politics, what else are you trying to get involved in for your career or for your job?
My ideal job would be able to create a program outside of the foster care system to help better with reunification of children and parents. So to focus on therapy from both sides and to really hone in on generational trauma and how we can fix families as a whole.
Gotcha. It sounds like you have a mental health seems to be very important to you. Are you trying to bring anything else to Allentown City Council that you think is unique to the city right now that really hasn't been brought up besides mental health? Is there any other points that you would like to bring to the forefront?
I want to push for more small businesses, a greener city. I also want to create an after-school program for children citywide, regardless of what school they go to combat gun violence. I know that you talked about how mental health is something that everybody really talks about, but I'm really focusing on creating a mental health program for city residents, regardless of if they have insurance or not, to really combat the problems that everyday people face, as well as, you know, especially after COVID, a lot of us have a lot of undiagnosed things or just feelings that we have to go to someone to process. So I'm really interested in looking at what the city of Allentown needs now and not maybe what they needed 25 years ago.
And, you know, I had some previous conversations with you before we got on this show, and you mentioned that one of the biggest things that you want to do is to inspire other young people to get involved in the political process, maybe run for a local position. So how do you plan on inspiring other young people to make them believe that they belong in these circles?
I plan on making the city more accessible, comfortable, and transparent to young people. I want to bring people out, and I want to bring them in spaces and circles and listen to their ideas and make them feel heard and inspired, and specifically go and seek them out as well. I feel like as a city official, you should be having more than an open door policy. I hope that they can look up to me and that they find me accessible as well so that I can help guide them and that they see that there's hope in where you come from, especially because I've sat in the same seats as them and lived the same life as them as well.
Growing up in Allentown, would you say that you didn't feel that politicians or local leaders were accessible to you?
No. Some of them I actually didn't even discover were people till I started getting into different circles, especially with my small business. It seems as if we only see them during election cycles and petitioning, and they just come to your door and ask you to sign a paper and then are on their merry way.
So you don't think it was, when you did see them around, that it was genuine in any way?
I wouldn't speak for all of them, obviously. Not everybody's the same, but sometimes it was a very blanketed interaction. Some of it was just for photo ops, especially with children in schools. So I'm hoping that if I get elected, I can change that, and then I can change that for the people around me, too. I would like to be able to work with my coworkers so that we can create more of a cohesive environment for Allentown as a whole.
That sounds amazing. It sounds really refreshing. I love it when young people get involved in leadership positions, and I really congratulate you and wish you the best of luck on your campaign. I know the primaries are on Tuesday, May 16th. So good luck to you in that. I just wanted to transition a bit to entrepreneurship. It's one of the themes that we always talk about on this show. And you started an LLC at 18 or 19?
So I started my business at 19, and then I made it an LLC at 20.
Ah, okay. And what's that business like, and how has it grown? What are the struggles, especially early on now? It's only, about 2 years in. I know there's a lot of struggles with small businesses, if you wanted to speak on some of that.
I'm actually truly blessed. Ever since that I started my business, I've had the same customers, and I've continued to grow, and they've grown with me. My product wasn't always perfect. I do chocolate-covered strawberries, so obviously your talent grows as you practice, but my community really showed up for me, especially because when I started having my small business, it wasn't as popular as small businesses are now, especially within youth. So it's really refreshing and inspiring to see. I have family that have come from New York, Florida, when they're stopping by. Like, people order from different states as well. So regardless of the struggles that you might face, like, obviously not everybody knows about banking and how to create a business and how to create an LLC. I feel like because I always had that constant flow of customers and people putting their trust in me, it was allowing me, and I was able to grow within myself as well.
I know you mentioned financial literacy with young people, whether it be in high schools or college level or even programs after school. Is this what made you realize that financial literacy was needed, that type of education was needed in the city?
Precisely that, and applying for my first credit card when I was 18 years old really opened my eyes up to the fact that we are not being properly taught about financial literacy and how to advance our life in that way as well. When you go to the bank, you can sit down with any banker when you're trying to open up a credit card, but obviously they're going to try to tell you whatever they want to tell you to open up the bank. So I think that by creating a program in school, we're preparing people for the future when they're ready to do this, when they're ready to get their credit card, when they're ready to get their first car loan, when they're ready to first buy their house. And in return, I think they will also share that information with other family members, maybe family members that didn't have access to education when they were growing up. So I think that plants a seed for growth within our whole community.
It seems like financial literacy classes have to be somewhere out there in the city, and I think there might be, but I have to agree with you. It seems like it just was not accessible, really, to younger people. What ways do you think would help programs that already exist to get in better contact with the young people that they're trying to reach?
I think by going to spaces like Allen and Deerhoff and Building 21 and the Boys and Girls Club and after school, places like that would really affect and help push the programs more. Sometimes it's really hard to discover programs that might be online or like at the AllentownSD.org, especially when you're 16, 17, 18 years old. You're not constantly Googling your school. So I think by working with teachers and informing students, that's the best way that we can get it out there.
So right now, you're in the middle of a campaign, you run your own business, and you're a full-time student at Kutztown. It seems like you have a lot on your plate right now.
Yes, I also work a job as well, so...
I forgot about that.
There is a lot on the plate, but I would rather have it on my plate, knowing that I can handle it and making change for people that maybe couldn't or don't want to handle as much. So just because you might not want to get in these spaces doesn't mean that your voice shouldn't be heard and you shouldn't be as represented within our city.
Well, it seems like you got 2 more months at least until the primary, so maybe after that some more will be taken off of your plate. Well, actually, maybe if you win, then another job starts, it kind of sounds like.
I think that job will be so fascinating and interesting that it won't feel like a job, because when you get to listen to people and directly affect their lives and make it better, it's more of something that's fulfilling. People don't go into politics for money, especially at a city level. So my personal sacrifice in my life and my mental sacrifice is for the people of Allentown. And I hope that that conveys well when I speak to them, because I want them to know that this is selfless. This isn't for me or my specific gratification of like being power hungry. Like, this is genuinely because I feel like we are not being heard, and it's time that we create something. And who says that we can't do it? Like, we sit here and we talk about all the things we hate online. So let's start to do something about it. Like, we have power in numbers, and together I feel like we can change things.
That all sounds great. I love power in unity right there that you're speaking of. Again, I wish you all the luck on all of your future endeavors in school, your job, this campaign. Is there any last words that you would like to say to any of the listeners out there?
I hope that after you listen to this, you feel like you might get to know me better as a candidate. And I just want everybody to know that I am striving to be the most accessible and relatable as I can to you. Please feel free to contact me. My number is on the internet, on my campaign Facebook page, but I'll repeat it here too. It's 718-362-7755. So please feel free to contact me with your direct thoughts or concerns about me running for city council or what you'd like to see in general.
This has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for joining us, Serena Torres, on Inside the 610. Thank you, listeners, for making time for this conversation. You can also find past episodes and other public affairs programming at WDIY.org and on all major podcast platforms. I'm Mike Fersetto, your host of Inside the 610, and this is WDIY 88.1 FM.